Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the terrible toll that suicide takes on those who have committed it as well as those left behind. Suicide and mental health is the topic tonight. My guests are clinical psychologist Dr. Nicole Cutts and Lisa Daughtry, the mother of Ian Daughtry, who committed suicide about 5 years ago when he was 18. Lines are still open. We will take your calls. If you can't get through, please keep trying. I promise we will get to you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, Cookie was asking about how can you cope with the loss of a loved one after they've committed suicide. Lisa, how did you cope with the loss of your son?
Therapy. And I continue to do therapy periodically. As I was explaining, that sometimes I have triggers. And remember, I used to work out a lot. But I remember I was cardio working on a trail and just started talking about him. And I started having an anxiety attack. And so from there, I basically reached out through a girlfriend of mine. She gave me a therapist contact number, and it was very helpful because sometimes you don't want to talk about it to friends and family members. So for me, going behind closed doors and expressing how I'm feeling, even if it's I'm crying for an hour, but just getting those emotionals, that outlet, that was very helpful for me. Mm-hmm. And with the advocating that I've done, I've also expressed, I call it the tune-up for the young people. You know, if you want to seek counseling or therapy, it's a tune-up. Don't look at it as a negative way. It's helping you as far as your coping skills.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that, Dr. Cutts?
Yes. I think that it's very important to have have grief counseling. And I would even suggest looking to work with a therapist who has had some prior experience with grief work and also with clients who have suffered from a suicide of somebody close to them. There are unique feelings associated with the grief and that's left with the folks who are left behind. You know, it's almost impossible not to have a certain conglomeration of feelings ranging from guilt to anger to, you know, self-blame. And that's normal. Unfortunately, that's what happens when people commit suicide. But that I think that really takes some work to get through.
McCookie, you said this was your ex-husband.
Amazing to me. And you don't think that these kinds of issues, for whatever reason, in our community, we do overlook a lot of the symptoms and signs. Mm-hmm. But you never think that you're going to be the one who's dealing with something like that.
But I guess my question is, and certainly not to get, you know, too far down into the weeds, obviously, but you were no longer married to him. And so, but did you still have a relationship with him of any type?
Not really, you know. We weren't like, you know, best friends and things like that. This is one of the reasons why I think it perplexes me, because I feel like, well, you know, it's been years since you were with him, but my heart still goes out to him. I guess maybe covenant, not I guess, covenant is real. You know, when you make those vows and so forth, even though you move on. But my thoughts are, my heart hurts for the pain that he must have been in to make that decision.
I see.
And I guess just thinking about those thoughts and those questions, of course, I pray for his soul and for his family and so forth. But my thoughts are, and I definitely know that I was not still in love with him. But it's just hurtful to think that another human being that you cared for at one time could be in that much pain to make this decision.
Well, Cookie, thanks
for sense?
Yeah, it does. And thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Christian, calling from Middleburg, Virginia. Thanks for calling.
If you'd like to make a call, please.
Christian, give us a call back if you can. Let us go to Daphne, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Daphne. What's on your mind?
Yes, I must stress that it's so important for this topic to be talked about in our community, because unfortunately the stigma, I also am a mental health professional, and I'm down here in the trenches. And again, unfortunately, this election and who is now in the White House is also causing people anxiety and stress. And again, people are very good at hiding what's bothering them. They're afraid to engaged family members or close friends or even the church pastor, oh, they don't want to hear what's going on with me. People think that they're supposed to just suck it up and keep going. And that's why so many times these things, these issues get missed, because you don't think, as long as people can function, you have no idea what's going on if they don't reach out to you. But I must stress to anyone listening to the sound of my voice, get help if you need it, if you're struggling, if you're tearful, if you're isolated from people, if you just feel like you can't make it, please call your, if you have insurance or if you have Medicaid, call your insurance provider. Okay. Find out what mental health services you can access and access them.
Well, Daphne, thank you so much, Daphne, for sharing that with me. And she brings up an interesting point about the stigma attached. And we don't have to look too far back to see the difficulties with stigma. Portia Williams, Real Housewives of Atlanta, when she admitted on the program that she was undergoing therapy for anger management. Not only was she lambasted on social media, even the other stars of the show criticized her for that. We've had other high-profile people who have committed suicide here in Washington. If you're of a certain age, you may remember, you know, John Wilson. The district building is named after John Wilson, who also committed suicide. He was a council chairman. Phyllis Hyman. The great songstress, R&B songstress, also committed suicide. So how do we address that stigma issue, Lisa? Because it is just really, it is disturbing. You know, particularly when we've seen this video shared more than 22,000 times in 2 hours of Stephen Stevens complaining and killing this man and griping. What's going on with us?
I don't think we take mental health seriously as far as Afro-Americans. We still don't think, I think in a way, not saying we're invincible, but I think we don't think it can happen to us. It's something that is, it's only a white Caucasian illness. It's any color. We have different levels of depression, and people could, level from being mild to extreme. But I don't think, as far as our community, we take it seriously. We don't take it as it's going to affect me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Dr. Cutts, I'm sure you heard, as I did growing up, suicide, black folks don't do that.
I actually did not hear that.
You never heard? Oh, yeah. When growing up, you used to hear it all the time. You know, suggested.
Yeah, I think that I think we make a mistake when we suggest that it's stigmatized in the African-American community, because I think that, and I'm not saying it's not, but I think it suggests that it's not also stigmatized in the white community. And it is. So I take issue with that in a way, because it's as if saying, oh, we stigmatize and don't listen. But white people, that's not necessarily true.
The reason I say that is because, and it goes back to that same old argument where when a crime is committed and you hear about it on the news, growing up, black folks looked at the TV. If it wasn't a black person who committed the crime, we ignored it. It's like, oh, thank God it wasn't a black person. That still applies with the stigma as it relates to suicide. Mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't happening to us, if it was happening in other communities, we didn't care.
But it was happening in our communities.
I understand that. But which goes back to the point that I'm making, is that we heard it, but it wasn't true.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that people that you knew engaged in a certain amount of denial.
Absolutely.
Well, I think what's more important to discuss is not the amount of stigma in the African-American community, but what to do about it wherever it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what we need to do about it is, as individuals, help to normalize it, you know, help to not participate in that stigma, you know, refrain from judging somebody who has expressed that they have mental illness or who has committed suicide or knowing somebody that's committed suicide. We need to, as individuals, refrain from stigmatizing other people.
Let's go back to the phones. Kim, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Kim. What's on your mind?
Yes, I want to say I really appreciate you all having this topic on. I, like the doctor, I lost my child, my daughter. She was 21, very intelligent, had the world by the tail 5 months from graduating college, and I lost her to suicide. So I really think that this is a topic that needs to be discussed. Like you said, we need to start to create some dialogue around it.
Yeah.
But I also think what would help, and right after my daughter passed away, probably about a year, of course you go into this mode of wanting to get it out there and talk about it and, you know, let people know mm-hmm. that, you know, this didn't have to happen because there is help out there. But yeah. I also think people need to understand, especially the people that are suffering, the after effect of this, because yeah. I think in their mind, while they're going through it, it's like they just want to end the pain.
Yeah.
But what I like to remind people of that do have issues with depression and anxiety is that you may end the pain, but the pain does not end. It transfers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you know, it's like it's a continuous pain, you yes. know. So it's kind of, I think the after effects kind of awakening people to understand what happens afterwards mm-hmm. is a huge help too, because I did several forums mm-hmm. and I have a play actually that I do called The Little Black Dress. Mm-hmm. Me and a playwright, we've done it at Howard University and a couple of other colleges, and it really made people talk.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of opened their eyes. It's like, wow, and didn't think about this side of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Kim, I thank you for sharing with us, and certainly we would certainly recommend that you continue to fight the good fight and to make sure that people are aware and to continue to talk about it, whether it be through theater conversations in your community, in your church community, however you decide to do it. So thank you so much.
Thanks,
for sharing with us. Let's go to, I believe this is Diana calling from Bladensburg. Is that correct? Do I have the name?
Yeah, it's pronounced Danya.
Danya. Okay. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I lost my youngest brother to suicide in 1994. And currently the walk chair for American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and we have a charity walk that's coming up October the 28th at the Lincoln Memorial. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things the Black community needs to be more aware of it and needs to be brought up in church. And mm-hmm. we really need to focus on it. And there's another organization called African Americans Against Suicide Prevention, and they're trying to bring awareness in the Black community as well. And I think we need to stop being afraid of addressing the issue.
Yeah. Well, Danya, thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate it. Tanya, calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Tanya. What's on your mind?
Hello, how are you?
Doing just fine, thanks.
That's great. Great. Yes, I'm in a healthcare professional. I'm in mental health. And I just wanted to comment on the topic that I think is very needed, because we have a lot of individuals who are suffering from depression, suffering from anger and things and such that would lead us to suicidal or homicidal, for that matter. Being in the profession that I'm in, I have come across clients who have expressed those issues, and I really feel that it stems from a traumatic event that has caused them in their life, stemming from even 5 years old, and never gotten the proper help, and therefore not developing coping skills. You have a lot of individuals out here that do a series of activities such as seeking or having codependency where they're drinking alcohol, anything to kind of rid the pain or suffering that they are encountering. So
Christian,
they will do these things,
Christian,
and it will
Christian, I need
build
you to,
up.
Christian, I need you to hold your point because I want my guests to speak to what you're saying, particularly as it relates to coping skills. So please stay with us. We're going to continue this conversation. As we talk about suicide and mental health, lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the discussion about suicide and mental health. Before the break, we were talking to Tanya, who brought up an interesting point about coping skills. And I want to talk a little bit about that. Dr. Cutts, are there tools that people can use to cope with depression, with anger, with dark thoughts that will prevent them perhaps from making the leap to suicide?
There are definitely tools and coping skills, and people benefit from having resilience building, you know, but to really get into knowing what they are and to practicing them, I don't think it's a sort of a quick fix thing. I think it's either therapy or being in a program of some sort where it's an ongoing process. Now, what can people do to help themselves and what can parents do to help their children is they can – the first thing we can do is work on our emotional intelligence and our ability to know what's going on with us and also how to manage what's going on with us, right? So anger, for example. I can know that I'm angry. That's good. That's the awareness. But then how do I manage my anger, right? So if I feel that I have a hard time managing that, then that's something that I need help with. So that's where I would go. If I engage in hopeless thinking or have low self-esteem, you know, and that's something that I would go and get some focus and some help with. So it's really I don't have a broad, there's no broad brush that you can paint that says, oh, do this and your coping skills will be better. You know, it's individual for each person.
Lisa, you have any thoughts about that?
People need to understand that it's not when someone decides, as my pastor used to say, it's an executive decision on that individual. Mm-hmm. It's not something that happens like yesterday and I decide today is a day that I end my life. It's level of depression. And so it can start off mild. And if we're not able to cope, it just keeps piling up and spiraling down. And if that person is unable to pull themselves up emotionally, you know, the energy is withdrawn, they get to that point where their hopelessness, their fatigue, they're tired, their mm-hmm. anger, they're sad, you know. And stress also is, people don't understand that stress, when your body and your organs mm-hmm. physically, that you're, when you're stress, mm-hmm. your body, your heart, your lungs, everything gets affected. So physically, you're going through as far as what depression and mental health you're going through, is stress can really put a toll on your body.
Tanya, thank you so much for bringing up that important point. Let's talk about some of the signs. What should you look for if you're on the outside looking in, and if you are self-aware enough, what should you look for if you are doing some self-examination?
Well, okay, so hopeless thoughts, being lethargic, not having any motivation, losing interest in activities that you normally have interest in, trouble sleeping, disturbances in your appetite, any change that if your personality seems to change suddenly, feeling restless, agitated. For teens, it's important to look at anger and irritability. So depression in teens can show up a bit differently. And the other problem, as Lisa, you know, has expressed, that the problem with assessing mental health in teens is that they go through so many changes, you know, that it's easy to say, okay, this is hormones, this is this. When is it really diagnosable? And one of the things that can make depression diagnosable in teens is the length of time that it's been going on. Mm-hmm. What do they express? You know, one of the things Lisa and I were talking about before the show is, you know, sometimes people think if I respond to their comment about a suicidal ideation, I'm encouraging it. Right. When really you're not, you're that's the emotional intelligence part. You're normalizing it to allow somebody to be able to talk to you about it. So, you know, if somebody's talking about it, that's also a sign that, that they're thinking about right. harming themselves.
You know, last week I lost a childhood friend to suicide who grew up a wonderful child, a wonderful teen, someone that everyone loved, everyone, you know, cared about, great family. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, just a really, really great guy. And certainly, you know, having spoken to his child's mother, his first child's mother, she said that he had been depressed, that he had been having, you know, problems at home. But she also said something that struck me. She said, and she had spoken to him a week before he died, was that the antidepressants were not working. So what do you do when, if you're going through counseling, obviously the only way to get antidepressants is if you've already been through the counseling process.
Yeah, that's oftentimes when people commit suicide, is when they become hopeless because they have tried. They have reached out. The medication isn't working. I do want to say one thing quickly in response to the caller who talked about depression coming from trauma. Depression doesn't have to come from trauma. It's a mental illness like any other illness. And you can have the best childhood in the world and still be afflicted with depression. But in that case, when medication hasn't worked, when certain therapies haven't worked, you have to keep plugging away. It's hard.
You know, it's
work, yes. But you can't give up because depression can lead to suicide.
How, Lisa, do you believe, you know, again, you know, hindsight is always, you know, 2020. How much more aware are you now of the kinds of signs that maybe Ian had shown you, that now that you may, as you see friends' children?
Sure.
And the like, that you, and is there the danger of being too conscious of that?
And I was speaking before we came on the radio station that at times now I have to go to a therapist because I assess people. And it can, as we said, take the energy from me. And I need a break, a sabbatical break sometimes. But what I used to say to when I was speaking at my son's school, we initiated a program, is that I learned from the nurse his visits. And she would call me. One thing I would say, the nurse was very adamant of calling me. And, you know, just to inform me, he had a stomach ache, you know. And that's, as I said, that's physically, that's stress. Now his body is taking a toll from the depression. He was fatigued. But I thought, okay, any teenager sleeps a lot. I did too. But when you start connecting the dots, you know, the stomach pain, the fatigue, the sadness, and sometimes his, and I remember he would say to me, "Mom, you're my only family." And we had a very close relationship, but society teaches us not to talk about depression, suicidal thoughts. And I would say, especially for parents, and as you stated before, Doctor, one thing I noticed with kids, they are very outspoken. Social media, even at face-to-face interaction, of just saying, kill yourself or just die. And you might not know who you're interacting with at that moment that takes that seriously. And I had a mentee that called me from the bathroom one time. This was years ago. She's graduated from high school because she basically, one of the girls knew that she cut herself. And she said, walked up to her and said, "You know what? I wish you would just die."
That's horrible.
And she stayed in the bathroom stall. And I had to call one of the administrators at the school to basically go get her. But it's, I think it at home, we need to start at home as far as having these discussions about mental health, about depression. But you also, as parents, we have to be the role model as far as, I wish we can go back to when I was a kid, that my neighbors knew my business,
mm-hmm.
you know, where my, they can go to me and say, they can go to my parents and say, well, she was on this street yesterday, you know, just saw her, whatever. But I wish we would get to that point where we take care of one another.
That's mm-hmm. a really good point.
I think that's a good place to end this conversation. Certainly, this will not be the last, unfortunately, as we talk about suicide and mental health. But as always, I want to thank Lisa Daughtry, the mother of Ian Daughtry, and Dr. Nicole Cutts. Always good to have you here, Dr. Cutts. Mm-hmm. We're also going to be posting information on WHUR.com for those who are looking for counseling. We'll tell you how to find that. Or some other kinds of resources. Also, we're going to be posting Dr. Cutts' website so that you can also reach out to her if you are looking for a counseling regarding suicide or any issue that you may be concerned about. So, again, ladies, thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, Harold.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, April 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.